looking for a sign, changing the planets and the radio waves. Ones and zeros and comic book heroes and a secret code through the pearly gates. I got my head checked, I got no regrets to my confession in the grocery line. All this while I've been waiting for a sign. It's talk, 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 talk.
This is Justin.
Yeah. This is Bruce.
And this is Mike.
And this is
episode 33 of The Break-Ins!
I think I messed up that intro.
You messed it up. I know, what show we're on, Justin.
That's okay. Oh, wait.
Are you still Justin?
Here? This is episode 33. What are we doing here today?
We're celebrating that we've made it 33 episodes.
Woohoo!
And I'm here for 7. You need to do some by yourself to catch up with me and Justin.
Yeah, hey, go in the corner and do some by yourself.
Do what?
What?
You need to do some podcasts by yourself.
Welcome to the Mike Show. More ramblings about my son right now. What's going on?
Yeah, you still call it the break-ins.
Oh.
Yeah, that's part of the joke.
I don't get it.
We just been sub.
Thank
sub
God.
Can I start breaking into Taco Bells around the state and I'll do a podcast about each break that I'm doing?
Why did you pick Taco Bell?
Because it seems sleazy and easy to get.
Ben tried the new Loco Tacos, the Dorito Tacos.
Yeah,
they're really good.
Speaking of which, don't we need to talk about our sponsors?
We do. Sponsors tonight are Bruce Sweet Tea.
My wife made it.
No.
Bruce and Ralphie's.
Bruce and Ralphie's Sweet Tea.
Sweet Tea. The sweetest tea you'll find in Germantown.
We also have Diet Mountain Dew and...
Grippers.
Grippos Twin Pack.
Potato chips.
Why buy one pack when you can get... Siamese Twin Grippo.
Is that one of the Marx Brothers potato chips?
Maybe.
It's Grippo.
I think that's Groucho.
Oh. That's awkward.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. And
you even did a bookmark about Groucho.
Did I?
The Batman one.
No, you did one about Grippo.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm confused.
Anyhow, we're here tonight.
To talk about potato chips.
Or...
And other things that come from the great state of Kentucky.
That's right.
Yes.
I don't know if they make
anything.
From the state of bluegrass and derbies comes the Derby City
Comic-Con.
Comic-Con.
Led and rallied and, I don't know, created, originated, fixated, possibly masturbated by Eric Bannister.
I cannot confirm or deny one of them.
I was on a roll. I'm like Don King.
I'll let you figure out which one.
Whatever. Anyhow, we're tonight with Eric Bannister, who is the man in charge when it comes to the Derby City Comic Con.
You know what? I'm not 100% sure. Are you in charge of this, Eric?
As far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'd always assumed you were, because you're the guy that walks around at other conventions saying, come to my convention, but I didn't know if it was your convention. There was another fellow, Paul.
Maybe. It is, I. Paul? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Paul, in charge of the panels.
Okay.
He puts it
over. You handle the gutters?
And that's how you would have contact, correct?
Yeah.
What? I handle the what?
The gutters. He's in charge of the panels, you're in charge of the gutters.
Comic book joke, man. This is a comic book.
I
didn't hear it. I couldn't hear it, sorry.
It's okay.
You didn't like Chris Pritchard at this convention where you say you run it, but it's not really yours. It's you. He may not understand.
I pay up, and then I'm the I'm just the spokesperson. That's not true at all.
Okay. So you're not just the hype man. You do a little.
You guys, wait, man.
Hype.
I started it and I run it.
Nice. And this.
Yes, all the above.
You're on your second year. First year went amazing.
Yes.
Or at least you said it went amazing on the website.
Yeah, the first... Yes, it exceeded our expectations by about threefold.
Wow.
So I went into it with the expectation that if we could do 1,000, I'd be happy. And we had over 3,000 come out for it. So
That is extremely...
That was a...
Me and Justin...
A big moment. That
me and Justin were looking.
You and Justin what?
We were looking into going to a convention in Indiana, that will remain nameless for these purposes. And they've been going for a few years, and on their website they were bragging about getting 900 people last year. And the next day I read about you guys busting 3,000. And I thought, wow, so I got to pay twice as much for a table to get one-third of the people and drive further, or I can go back to Derby.
Or going to Derby.
Oh, yeah. I think you did everything right the first year. Everything went perfect. I just re-listened to episode 23 when me and Justin came back from Derby. And I think the only thing Justin had to complain about was his 30-minute trek to the bathroom.
Yeah, at least yeah. Bathrooms were closed. We said no.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think from your table to the bathroom was probably like 50 yards, maybe.
Yeah, trust me, the smell.
We missed to take the scenic route.
Yeah, he started walking, I don't know.
Oh, then we got lost. Due leaving west. The Derby, didn't we?
Yeah, that was our own fault. That had nothing to do with
the smallest elevator.
So basically, when you cross like the Mason-Dixon border, Justin, you get lost on your return. Is that
yeah,
what it
pretty much every
to?
Visit.
Okay.
South.
Well, Justin just came back from vacation. It went beautifully, didn't it?
I got lost in Nashville. Louisville was fine. So I thought.
Now, I'll say Nashville is very easy to get lost in. I've been lost in Nashville several times.
The streets are all streets are messed up.
Yeah, GPS had me wanting to take an alley, which doesn't even exist. So it's a building. I mean, a building they built recently, like from hundreds of years ago. I don't know.
Hundreds of years ago?
Thousands of years
colonial
ago.
Colonial times.
Ruins of man.
The druids put it in place.
Bruce, did you want to talk about the Derby. Are you going to talk about the Derby?
You want me to get
you
him?
Go.
You talk
come
about
on,
the Derby now, Eric.
You tell us.
That's right.
This is the second year for the show, and it's June 30th. We've got a lot of indie creators that were there last year coming back, and we've got several new ones that had heard about the show and either couldn't make it last year or didn't know about it last year, so they're making it this year. And then we were able to get some more nationally known, I guess, creators, suckered them into coming. So
yeah.
Hopefully we can use them. The goal of getting, you know, guys like that is to help draw the people in so that they're introduced to the independent creators that are there.
Right. Have you listened to the Crankcast lately, Mike Norton's podcast?
I have not. I'm way behind on podcasts.
He mentioned him and Crank had a conversation about Derby City.
A recent one?
One before last, they mentioned it. And then the very last one, Crank is like, hey, you're still going to that one in Louisville. And Mike's like, oh, yeah, Derby City, we're excited. Because I guess you're having most of Mike Norton's studio there.
Yeah, four-star studio. I think we have three of the four stars. I don't know what happened to the four star, but he's not.
he couldn't chip in for gas.
I guess not. Somebody had to stay and watch the studio, maybe. I don't know.
If everybody's gone somewhere, someone's still going to be creating, right? So he's doing ghost penciling for everybody.
He's staying there to pay the bills.
There you go.
Now, it will be in the same location this year, won't it?
Yeah, and we're in the same convention center and in the same hall of the same place we were last year. Only thing that has changed is the panel location of that room. But,
well, the date's a bit different, too, isn't it? It's a little earlier this year.
Yeah, last year we were in July. We were July 16th, which put us a week ahead of San Diego. And this year, that date was taken with the convention center, so we ended up on June 30th, which is the week after Heroes Gone. So,
okay. I will say that you moving the date, it surprised me. I thought I had a little more time because I'm kind of a slack ass. And then when me and Justin were talking about it, he's like, no, it's earlier.
Yeah, it's 2 weeks. I guess it'd be 2 weeks earlier than last year. So, and it will probably stay the last weekend of June.
at this point, do you just book the convention center like every year for this time, or how does that work?
Well, Kentucky, Louisville in particular, is a very big convention city.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of conventions that want in. So the convention center doesn't have to help you out any, and they don't go out of their way to do so. So they won't book you, like give you a contract until less than a year out from the date. So if we are going to be the last weekend of June next year, I can't sign that contract until the Monday after our show this year.
Hmm.
But they will pencil us in.
Nice.
So we are penciled in for that weekend in June for the next 5 or 6 years, maybe.
Oh, that's good to hear. I'm glad you're being optimistic.
We may be the only two there, but
I'll show
there's no contracts. There's no contracts, but we, I have to say unofficially, or what's the other word I'm supposed to use?
Tentatively.
Tentatively, yes.
Tentatively.
Because we don't have a contract. So, tentatively, the last weekend in June till 2020 or something like that.
You would think that if you guys had three times the amount of people you were kind of expecting to come out last year, that Louisville would see that as like, oh, this could actually draw in some revenue. We should go ahead and try to get something long-term figured out with you to make sure that's guaranteed every year. You know what I mean?
Well, does the convention center make more money if you make more money?
Because
they're just kind of charging you for the space, right? They didn't have vending places set up.
They charge you for everything. So they may, if I make money by getting more people in, they make more money at the concession stand because we're not allowed to even give the artists water if we haven't purchased it from the convention center.
Jeez. Wow. I wonder if that's a Louisville Convention Center only thing, because
it depends on the they go through a concession place. I found this out because last year my goal was to bring in some sort of food for everyone, for all the artists. We were going to set up a little hospitality booth or whatever in the back, and the representative 2 weeks before the show. We were walking through the space, and there was a door, and I said, does that door open to the outside? And she said, yeah, but why? And I said, well, we were thinking about bringing some pizza or something. And she said, oh, no, you can't do that.
Wow.
So she said, you have to go here, use our official caterers. And in looking at that, the caterer's site, they have exclusive contracts with convention centers and stadiums and places all across the country.
Yeah, it's like Teamsters.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So it's like $6 for a 20-ounce thing of water or something like that. So
you want me and Justin to bring some stuff?
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't be coming from you. It'd be coming from us.
Yeah.
I would do that for you.
I appreciate it.
I'll break convention law.
And they also
establishment room. Damn the man!
Louisville, they may just have stockades or something to put me in. People be throwing tobacco at me.
Or bourbon.
Oh, yeah, that's better.
Yeah.
Give a comment. Give me the punishment.
But, yeah, that's a new development. The convention center would probably punish me for talking about this, but I sent in the last deposit for this year's show, and they got it last Friday, and the sales manager, who was our sales contact, called and said, you know, got your check. He said, I noticed we only have you penciled in to 2013. Are you going to start looking for somewhere else after that? And I thought, well, no, not wasn't my intention. And he said, well, I said, my impression was I couldn't do it any farther than that. And he said, oh, well, we'd like to, lock you in until like 2020. I said, do it.
Yeah.
Write it down.
It's a nice convention center, from mm-hmm. what I remember. I mean, you know, the floors were numbered, I think, counterintuitively.
For the panels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because what was it? The second floor is actually floor one, because the ground floor is floor G.
Yeah. That's damn.
It's not even a number.
That's a Kentucky State Fair board for you.
I'm sure somehow there's someone getting a check for that. Our floor numbering department.
Maybe they make money if you wander around lost or something. I don't know.
Oh, hopefully they didn't charge you for me and Justin getting lost in that tiny elevator last year.
Sounds like a whole nother podcast.
We mentioned it. Like I said, I went back and listened to 23. And we apparently found a one-man elevator and the two of us crammed into it.
We'll show you, Mike.
Wow, I don't know if I want to now. That's cool.
So what about some of the guests that you have coming to the show?
Yeah, you mentioned you had some larger, more mainstream names. Who jumps out to you? Who is your prize catch this year?
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing Mike Norton. I'm a big Mike Norton fan. I love Battle Pug, and this is why I need to go listen to the Crankcast, because as much as I like the man, he is awful at returning emails. So I would like to know if he's going to bring the Battle Pug hardback, which comes out the Wednesday after our show. So I'm hoping that our show is the first one he has him at, but so I can get a hold of one.
That may be more of a dark horse thing than just a mic thing.
I think it is.
He might get some advanced copies. You know. Yeah.
Well, I talked to him and Crank. Crank's big on returning things on Facebook, but I've posted in the comments section of their podcast before, and they'll get back with you in 2 or 3 hours. I mean, that's incredibly unofficial, but...
Maybe I'll try that. I had to corner him at Cincinnati. That's how I got him.
Wow. He's doing so well for himself. I was concerned when this whole DC-52 thing came around and his name wasn't attached to anything whatsoever. Because he strikes me as a workhorse. I'd love to have the speed and the just workmanship he does behind everything he does. Because I think there for a while he was doing 3 books a month.
Yeah, he did a couple off the kids line and some other stuff too.
Yeah.
He's good.
Ben, he's really like self-sufficient now. Mm-hmm. He's got the Battle Pug and what's the 4-star book that those guys do? The PDF downloads. Double feature.
Yeah,
and he's got 2 other webcomics he does besides Battle Pug. One for Shifty Looks, and then one for, is it Sand? Sands or something or another. I don't know. I have a bookmarked at work. I don't just remember by name here. So who's your number 2 superstar? Is Larry Hama in the top 5?
Yeah. Hopefully he'll be there.
Yeah, we saw that. We're like, should this stay questionable, or I don't know how you list it. You didn't see the sad faces at Jim's, and it was pretty bad.
Or is it something to do with the pushback of the G.I. Joe?
Well, I did.
Application that he's not going to make it till March now. Do you hear about that, Eric?
No.
Yeah, they pushed back the release of the next G.I. Joe movie
by 9 months.
Yeah.
Converted to 3D. Is
whatever.
That's what they're saying.
Well, that's what they're saying.
That's good thinking. Because it was supposed to come out the day before Derby. So,
Joe would have been a big killer for you there then. Really.
Yeah.
No, it would have been a boon because everyone coming out of the movie had been like, hey, let's go see Larry Hama.
Yeah.
He's responsible for this drivel.
He's got the rock in it, man. Calm down.
Man, you being so Cobra right now.
Yeah. I'm proud of that. Who is Cobra Commander in this new one?
Doesn't matter. Just
I don't know. As long as he has that cloak looking thing, that was always my favorite.
Oh, well, like I'm a silver mask guy.
The face cape, or was he had?
Yeah, you like I'm a silver mask.
Whatever the thing was.
You're like I like the mask.
Yeah,
I think I like the other one.
The reflective one.
I like the cloak thing. I think because kid, no, the you know just the rag on his head.
Yeah.
However, it stayed on. Who knows? I think it was like bobby pins or something. I think I liked that one because when I was a kid, you could save up the points and send off for they had a special figure or whatever, and that was one of them, the one with the cloak. So it was like a
it was rare,
like one of prized possessions until the dog ate it or something.
Who else we have? Tony Moore.
Tony Moore's returning.
Daryl Banks. Was he? He's new this year, I think.
Yes. Daryl Banks. Yeah, he's new this year, and I was excited to get him. I tried to get him last year. He's a really nice guy, but I just couldn't connect. He's another one I had to corner at Cincinnati and get to come. And I was lucky enough that the show did well enough last year that there were a couple of artists that he's really close with that recommended to him that it was worth his trip. So
he did. He did my very first portfolio review ever. He did my very first portfolio review ever.
Oh, really?
Just tore me asunder.
What year was this?
Oh, Lord, 96, 97.
Oh, come on, man. He's like All-Star Green Lantern at that point in time. Yes, he's going to tear everybody asunder at that point in time.
He was like, oh, you're not leaving enough room for dialogue. And I said, well, good job on the Kyle Rayner mask. You're going to walk away.
Way to take critique, Peter.
I was young.
Hey, he gave Justin a good portfolio review one time.
He did.
That's why I buy six of every Green Lantern comic that comes out.
Steve Scott is going to be there too. Is he new to your show?
Who was
it? Steve Scott?
Yeah. That's the first year he's there. Mm-hmm.
He's a good guy.
You got a job member.
Yeah, first year he'll be there.
Like, I'm always promoting him. He's like,
he's one of the guys you're
looking at. He was in the middle, and he worked on Batman a little bit last year before they did the renumber.
Did he do...
He did the X-Men.
X-Men with Claremont?
Okay.
Yeah. He was two tables away from you at Gym City.
Right.
Right in front of Scott.
Yeah, well, I was like, hey, Steve.
Oh, that guy. I thought that was Dan Tarrant.
No, he didn't like it.
He was right in front of you.
Yeah.
Dan Tarrant was right across from you, and then Steve Scott was right around the corner from him.
I only know where Benjamin Franklin, Abraham Lincoln, Jackson. I know where those gentlemen were in relation.
They were in your lunch pail.
Yes. No, Justin has a lunch pail. I have a lockbox.
Right. Right.
I'm like with Al Gore.
I actually saw more of your money that day than anybody else did because I was taking everybody's money for you.
I was schmoozing with the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a lie.
Are you doing a lot of promotion for the show? I mean, on the radio or?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure yet because that stuff I learned last year I started real early. I started about this time, about a month out, and everybody just tells you to get back with them like the week of the show.
Yeah.
So that's I'll be hitting it in a week or two. I'll be hitting that part hard and trying to. To drum up that. Last year we got on, we had one radio interview and four of the five local stations. So I'll be trying for that again and hopefully we can.
What did the TV stations give you?
We appeared on two of the noon newscasts and one of the more popular morning shows.
Okay.
And then the other one had like a, they have like a news magazine type thing, and we were on that.
That's cool.
And then after the show, we were on, let's see, two or three of the stations did stories about the show, like the night of the show. So after it was over.
Yeah, those are never beneficial, but they're easier for the stations to do.
Yes.
What panels are you going to have this year?
Oh, gee. Let me see if I can remember. See, because Paul's in charge of the panels.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot.
No, they're doing one. There's the Small Press Showcase again.
Okay.
And... there's one, you know, every every show, it seems like, has one on digital comics. So we are also having one on digital comics, but ours is the effect of digital comics on the local comic book shop. So we have some of the owners or managers or whatever of local shops that are going to be talking about how they see it affecting the business, how it affects their business now, that kind of thing. And then we have a...
That's very smart.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting because I think that's the angle that doesn't get talked about too much, you know?
Right.
I mean, I love digital comics and stuff, so I think it'll be interesting to hear because I've talked to some that they haven't really noticed an effect of it yet. So, you know, it may be a short panel. I don't know.
It probably depends on the market. And last time I checked, Kentucky only had 56% broadband.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of family down in Campton, and they don't have broadband as an option. It's dial-up or satellite internet, which is very expensive.
I live in southern Indiana, and I have the community I live in has a broadband that's on, it's like a utility. It goes through the city utilities.
Yes.
And I only live about 6 miles out of town, and we have it, but it takes forever to download a comic. Even, you know, I can watch videos and that kind of thing, but for some reason the comics just take forever to download. Like, I'm talking like 2 hours for a single issue to download.
IP priorities. I know a lot of places have been shifting to like a more DSL approach to things like Netflix, where depending on the service you're downloading from, it'll shift priorities across the entire network for you.
Jeez.
That's why Comcast is wanting to charge Netflix for every time somebody accesses Netflix.
Wow.
It's crazy.
I read a lot of boring articles.
Apparently.
This stuff fascinates me.
It is. It's interesting.
It is interesting.
It's just people sitting around trying to figure out how to make more money off of something they already provide for free. How are we doing on time, Justin?
Oh, we're doing good.
What does good mean?
About 22.
Let's go ahead and pause for a break, and then we'll come back and we'll get to some actual questions and less chit chat.
All right.
So that it's not just one way
right back.
The Golden Girls.
Hey now, man! Over 3,000 people came to the Derby City Comic Con last year, so they're doing it again. Head on down to Louisville, Kentucky, Saturday, June 30th, and get y'all a ticket to see ya. Sean Dove, Tony Moore, Mike Norton, Eric Adams, Sean Forney, Bruce O'Hughes, Nate Lovett, Scott D.M. Simmons, Justin Wasson, and a whole heck of a lot more. All that comic-y goodness in a buffet-style KFC just 2 exits away. Find out more at DerbyCityComicCon.com. Damn!
All right, we're back, and we're ready for the questions.
Yeah.
Questions with Mr. Eric. About the Derby City Comic Con.
It's the pre-lightning round.
Oh, yeah. Geez. Some of these will be serious. Others will be obscure. Is that nice? Is that a good way?
All of them will be asked inappropriately. Probably.
I can't guarantee that because I'm asking them. All right. Mr. Eric.
did the questions from my press agent make it?
Yes.
Yes.
We threw those out. The first one was, how sexy are you?
We didn't know how to respond.
No answer required.
What are the pros and cons to having big name guests?
Well, big name guests like the ones we have, or just big name guests that you would like to have? Because there's two different things. The big name. There are a lot of big names out there that people want us to have that just won't do a one-day show.
Yeah.
And I'm not in any hurry to jump to 2 days.
Please don't.
When it comes, it comes. But duly noted. But for that reason, I mean, there's a lot. We really try to focus, and this is, I'm not getting away from the question, but I'll get back to it. We really try to focus on the indie side of it. And I know that it is more cost-effective for it to be a one-day show. The big names that we got this year, with the exception, we have a few, like Steve Scott, Dennis Calero, Rodney Ramos, that we flew in, and Larry Hama. But most of them are from, you know, Chicago or somewhere in Kentucky or, you know, St. Louis or somewhere like that.
Perhaps so, Dayton, Ohio.
And Dayton, Ohio. Germantown.
Way to make it creepy. Do you know my street address?
He's got a Google Earth image of you right now.
What corner of the basement should I turn to and wave at?
The call is coming from inside the house. There you go.
He's giving my son a bath right now.
I don't know where to go with myself.
I gave my son a bath right before this, and we've practiced spit takes. So I'm trying to train him right. He's pretty good. He's 3 years old, and he's getting pretty good at a spit take. He always wants me to say, "That's disgusting," then he does the spit take. Anyway, the big names. That's really the only con. I mean, we haven't had any, like, real outrageous demands or anything like that so far. They're not here yet, so who knows?
I would think that if you had an exceptionally large name, that people would just come and see that one person, then turn around and walk away. Now, from your standpoint, they've already paid for a ticket, right? So, I mean, they're already in.
Yeah.
But from everyone around them, I mean, I don't know, are you blessed or cursed to be the guy next to Jim Lee at a comic convention?
Right.
You know, and that that thought is in my head as I do the floor plan. Like last year with Tony Moore, Tony has a line or a crowd pretty much anywhere he's at. So I tried not to put anyone right beside him that wouldn't directly benefit from his fans. But I tried to put maybe similar artists where I wanted his line to go, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that while they're lined up in front of the table, these zombie fans aren't looking at, you know, Scott Simmons' artwork because they may not be interested.
Right.
Next to him was like Gary Friedrich and the Zombie Trading Company and Billy Tackett and people who were in the same kind of genre. So
it makes sense. Your layout last year was really good, I thought. Everything made sense. It flowed from table to table to table.
So basically, you're kind of treating people like the candy at the register as you're waiting to go out and be like, man, that Butterfinger actually looks really good before I check out your
point of purchase.
What's that? Point of purchase, yeah. I mean, and that's a really good way to lay out a floor bottle. It's just, you know, if the line's going to be that long and you're going to have people standing there waiting, it's either they're going to get frustrated and walk out, or you give them something else to be like, oh, hey, this is along the genre of what I like, you know, so.
Yeah.
So because that's good thinking.
If they're standing there by something that they have no interest in, they're going to be bored and the person at the table is not going to make any money.
Right.
So at least if it's, you know, another zombie picture, then maybe they, you know, maybe they discover somebody they didn't know beforehand or something like that.
And the other problem is people might be turned off to go to somebody else's table who's not in that genre, too, because there's a line always in front of their table that has nothing to do with that.
Yeah, I would feel really bad if the guy next to Tony Moore has little black and white, you know, mini comics about his feelings on cats or something.
No, the cat's guy is on the other side of the table.
I remember the 1 year I went to Space, the Small Press and Comic Expo, I was in between Top Shelf and some guy selling rocks that he'd hot glued little soldiers to. And that it was the weirdest little diverse row. And I was excited. I'm like, hey, I mixed the top shelf. Well, everyone spends $150, you know, buying Alan Moore semen. They don't have any money for my little comics. And then the poor guy selling rocks and soldiers. I don't think he made any. I think somebody gave him a sandwich. I felt bad for it.
Was there anyone last year that was more of an indie person that in the last year has become a big name? Because I know last year was your first con, so...
That's a good question.
Can't go any farther back, but anyone that just kind of blew up that's now at your convention this year? Mm. Besides Bruce Mazel.
Not that I can think of. Yeah.
I mean, you think about it. You think Tony Moore at one point was a pretty independent artist with Battle Pope.
Battle Pope, yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. And now he's a huge name. I mean, with Walking Dead and everything.
And most artists, and whatnot, you know.
Most artists are independent artists, usually to begin with, of some sort.
Some of them are jeans models who just happen to fall into the... That's a Rob Liefeld.
You're making a play. Button your fly. Like Bad Rock.
It was Bad Rock at first.
I know, but none of these people wear pants.
I don't know. Or have feet, or... They always have a gun, too. It's weird, I know.
It's not even a gun.
It's a gun sword, even better. Final Fantasy VII totally ripped off Rob Liefeld.
I'm thinking it's not even a gun or a sword. It's usually just some sort of slightly rounded shape that's taped to the top of their thumb. It's like a pacifier. Like a full-mouth pacifier.
It's like any way he can have something blocking their feet. It's like, let's have wooded forest here, right here, and they're standing in the bushes.
We're upsetting Justin. We are upsetting Justin.
So, what are some of your favorite areas of the con?
Well, you know, we only really have one area of the con. You mean like of the different genres that are there, or
what are you talking?
We have the vendors, and then we have the comic people. We don't have any games. We don't have any media people. None of that.
Auctioneer.
See, this was my question.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that you guys didn't have like, you know, it seems like every con I go to, there's a Magic the Gathering table randomly set up somewhere, you know. Even if you don't have it there, you'll probably have one before the end of the day.
It's in the bathroom at Derby.
Yeah. That's right. So I didn't realize if you had, like, a horse.
Well, there's a Magic Gathering in the bathroom, but I don't know if it's
some dank magic. Just up there.
Going back to coffee again, aren't we?
I did find a note about a Magic Gathering in a small elevator in the back, but I didn't know what it was about.
Oh, got a gathering. I'm getting
some sword fighting. or cockfighting, as Justin preferred to call it. Whatever, you enjoyed yourself.
Don't cross the streams.
Sorry. God, Mike.
Did Justin just throw down his mic? I heard something. Did Justin throw his mic down?
I hit my headphones and it hit the mic, so we're good.
Oh, okay, good.
So what are some?
I thought he did enough.
What are some of the biggest hassles or surprises that you have when it comes to the Derby City Comic Con or this year's Derby City Comic Con?
Hassle wise, you know, I think I've been fairly fortunate. They're not. Nothing huge. I mean, dealing with the convention center, like I talked about earlier, that's kind of a pain sometimes because it's like there are so many shows in Louisville that they don't feel like they need to do anything. Like they're doing you a favor by letting you pay them money to use their piece.
They're like the hottest piece of ass in town.
So that's...
They can do whatever they want. Everyone's just going to keep going for it.
I throw money at it. And
you see?
I throw money at it, and they just strut right away. probably the only other thing, and this is probably more of just a minor pet peeve, but, you know, I said it earlier in the last question, too, and about the indie artists, and I really want to promote the indie artists, So if I have to beg you for a bio or a picture to put on the website, don't blame me if nobody knows you're there. That's a real need for me as somebody who, outside of this, is, you know, I really enjoy marketing and that kind of stuff. So there was, for example, I got an email just yesterday, I think, from a small press who signed up in December, and the return email is always, you know, thanks, blah, blah, blah. Send me a bio and a logo. I'll put it up on the website. Never heard a word from them. This was in December. Until yesterday, and they emailed and said, why aren't we on the website? And I referred to them. Well, if you check the email sent to you on this date in December, you'll see my request for a bio and a picture, which I still haven't gotten, by the way.
At that point, you just make something up.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, it's not to sound like a baby, but it's more work for me to go out and find your picture and bio to promote you.
Right.
If you want to promote, if you're going to cons to sell things and promote yourself, it is not hard to have a standard picture and a standard bio saved as a text file, even, that you just send to every con you sign up for.
Yeah.
It's marketing 101. So
that's how I operate.
Yeah. That's because you're a professional.
Oh, look at that.
Thank you, sir. I will kiss you in return when we meet in
person. There'll be a mystery bottle of water underneath your desk, and nobody will know who it's from.
Oh, I thought I was giving him the water. But the bottom will be hollowed out, and that will be a surprise. But like theater popcorn. No, too much guessing. I am sorry.
Keep it real.
Now, Eric, you are you're a graphic designer, right, for a memorial? Is that correct?
Yes, I'm the at a memorial company. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Monument
company.
Oh, you did some research, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we do when we're out watching Godfather. or watching Godfather, whatever. So you do that. So how does one, what mm-hmm. convention did you go to that sucked so bad that you're like, I, person that does this as my regular job, and run a better convention?
Well,
you don't have to name names. You can just describe.
The answer.
Yeah.
Well, no, there wasn't one. But that was the point. When I started planning, Cincinnati Comic Expo hadn't started yet. It wasn't even the... I started the seeds of Derby City like 4 months before Cincinnati, so I didn't know anything about that show. So if you were in Louisville and you wanted to go to a comic show, you had to go to Gym City, which is about 3.5-4 hours, Mid-Ohio in Columbus or Chicago or Heroes. There just wasn't anything around, so... My background before this was I ran a booking agency for some independent musicians. So I promoted concerts, and I'd helped other people promote concerts. And there's a little show in Indianapolis every other month. It's just a little hotel show. And I would go up to it, and I thought, there's nothing. It takes a... I live in southern Indiana, so it takes about an hour and a half to get to that show. And I just thought, you know, there should be something. There's 7 comic shops in Louisville. I thought surely it could support a small hotel show that was just like the one that I go to up there. You know, it's like 20 dealers and 2 artists or something like that.
Yeah.
But there's a guy named Daniel Burnham. He was the architect for the Chicago World's Fair, the first big World's Fair. And he has a quote that I've always liked that said, and I'm going to butcher it probably because I never can remember it verbatim. But basically, dream no small dreams because they don't stir up the blood of the people you talk to.
Okay.
So a hotel show, there's a stigma with a hotel show a lot of times that they're, you know, cheaply ran or they're just thrown together as a money grab of some sort. So I decided I didn't want it at a hotel. And in Louisville, the next step up is the convention center. So at that point, it had to be bigger than the one that I had been going to. And then in that time of planning it, Andrew had Cincinnati, and I went over to it, and I enjoyed it. And maybe naively or cockily, I don't know what you want to say, but I thought, I think I could do that, you know. So I did,
and it worked out beautifully.
Yeah, I mean, and the other part of that is now I'm the art director at a monument company, and I specify that because that's a recent development. Prior to that, I was just an artist there. We have four full-time artists, and we just. Another company just bought ours. But prior to that, it was not ran very well, and I had no responsibilities, and I was bored out of my mind. So I one of my kind of skill sets is logistics and management type stuff, and I just felt like I was going crazy, and which is it's really odd because I made my living doing art, but I really wanted to do the logistic stuff, which is kind of opposite of a lot of people.
Yeah,
but
brain right
in, yeah, in my mind, it's all creating. So I just wanted to create. And not to get too deep, although, you know, you guys have some great, more philosophical discussions on here.
Are you sure you're listening to the right podcast?
No, you guys do. And that's not to go off on a side note, but that's one thing I've always enjoyed about your guys' podcast is you guys are honest about the craft and what it takes as independent artists to, you know, bust your humps to do this stuff, even if you're not, you know, making your living at it. It's what's driving you. Something's driving you to create. And that was kind of a similar thing. And I mentioned my son, and I have it was about legacy for me. I had a job that wasn't really fulfilling. I had put in motion to start another project, the Indiana Music Hall of Fame, and I assembled the board and all that, and it turned into some red tape, and the Derby City was something that I could zone in on and just make happen, and I didn't need a bunch of, you know, the stuff with the nonprofit group with the Hall of Fame and all that kind of stuff. It was just me, and I just pushed it through, and we have what we have today anyway. So not to get too deep, but does that answer the question?
No, yeah. That's an awesome story.
I have a sidebar or a spinoff question of that. So with where you are going with music and this, that, and the other, like, what's your background with the industry and comics then?
Just a fan.
Oh, just always been a fan?
Did you ever try to be an artist?
No, I can't draw.
You're talking to the man who doesn't draw anything for this group, okay? So.
No, I write. I've written a lot of music articles, interviews and reviews and stuff, and been published, you know, several magazines and things, but there was a time in the mid-90s, mid to late 90s, I lived in Cincinnati for about 4 years and had kind of gotten out of comics a little bit, and then I started a new job at a big electronics retailer, computer retailer.
Yeah.
Computer retailer. And I met a guy there who drew, and that got me back into comics, and we would just talk during the day, and I and this is real, it's kind of goofy now looking back on it, but we had a discussion about how thick must Superman's white shirts be, or Clark Kent's white shirts, that the S doesn't stick through him. So I
totally woke up.
Yeah,
the thread count is in the thousands.
I wrote a whole story featuring Bruce Wayne and Diane Prince shopping for a anniversary present for Clark and Lois. That line there. And a couple of the guys that I worked with thought it was kind of cool, so I sent it to DC, and I have still... in a frame, my rejection letter from DC, because I was told, and you know, I'd never tried to get anything published in any sort at that point, and I was told, well, here's what you have to do. You have to write your own letter for them to return, you know, and it's like a third grade, do you like me thing, you know, you put check boxes at the bottom. I did all that, and it was Dan Rappler was the editor at the time of the Justice League group, and he sent it back to me with a big question mark by the check boxes, and that's why I thought, well, whoever told me that didn't know what they were talking about, because he didn't even know what the check boxes were for. But then he wrote about a paragraph at the bottom of it thanking me for sending it and talking about how it was a little more personal than what they sent, but try to send it to this editor and maybe, you know, I'd get a reply from them, and it was really encouraging for a rejection letter. But after that, we came up with a couple of little ideas for some indie stuff, and he wasn't a very good artist, and he wasn't very disciplined, so it never went anywhere. And then I never tried to write anything after that. I wrote probably three or four scripts that I sent to DC that for different properties that never were. I never got a letter back on the rest of them, so. So I did try to write some comics at one point, but I didn't, I wasn't serious enough to go the independent route or anything.
Right. Now, when Dan Rappler was at Gem City, I think it was it last year, year before last? Did you go up and talk to him?
It must have been the year before last, because that last year was the first year I went to Gem City.
Okay.
I don't remember him being there. May have been. If he had been, I would have. If I had known him there, I would have taken that letter to see. why did you question mark these check boxes? That would be
Did you not like me?
I have a rejection letter from him when I tried to submit some Justice League stuff, and his only note on the rejection letter was. You'll never make it in mainstream comics unless you draw people more attractive. So at that point, I'm like, okay.
Well, that's the 90s. So
up yours, mainstream comics.
Every girl wore a tight, thing that just went up her butt crack.
Yeah.
So
no one had a vagina.
No, there was
no separation
at all.
There. It was just a solid mass that hung down. So like a stegosaurus tail.
Eric, did you have a particular single issue or a mini series or run on comics that you were that you love, that made you fall in love with comics, I guess, or have a passion for it?
Not that made me fall in love with it. What made me get into comics was I grew up about 45 minutes from where I live now, but it was out in the sticks in southern Indiana, and my aunt was going to be a beautician, and someone sold her this mobile beauty salon that was basically an Airstream trailer.
Wow.
That the inside was tricked out as a beauty shop. Had the big chairs, the big hair dryers, the big big sinks, for washing hair and all that stuff. So that got parked in my grandmother's backyard, and then my aunt decided to go into nursing instead. So when my uncle, who's 12 years older than me, he bought comics all the time. And then when he moved out, they cleaned out his room and put all the boxes and stuff from his room in this trailer. So in the summer, I would go to my grandma's. We lived about a mile down the road. And I went in there and found just these boxes of comics. And there were a lot of these, like, 100-page giants or 80-page giants or whatever of DC where it just reprinted old stories. You know, there'd be like a Superman story, then a Flash story, then a Justice League story, and then the next issue would have a Justice League story, then a Batman and something else. And but the bulk of them were Marvel comics. And he had a huge run of Spider-Man comics. And that's probably the first one that I really dug into. And I was like maybe like 6 or 7, 8 years old or something, just learning to read. And so the Spider-Man stuff was what I really got into originally. So when I started collecting on my own, my other grandmother lived about an hour away, and every Sunday we would go see her, but we would stop at midway through at a Hook's drugstore, and I would get to buy one comic off the spinner rack. So then I would read it the rest of the way, and then when I got to my grandma's, my cousin, his dad was in the military and was stationed in Germany, and his mom and his brother, they all moved in with my grandparents, my other grandparents, and he collected DC comics. And I always got Marvel. So when I would get there, we would trade the comic I just bought and read for one of his, or I would bring a stack to him. And so we were always trading. And then I had a friend that read, and he read different Marvel titles than I read. So every Wednesday, we would meet up and exchange a stack of books. So I read a bunch of old stuff. I was buying current stuff, but I read, like, you know, all the old X-Men from, he had issue from 94 on, and I caught up with those. And then he had like the first Wolverine miniseries, and I mainly got Avengers and Captain America and the Spidey titles. And so there wasn't one in particular. If I had to pick one in particular, it would probably be the Spider-Man stuff, and then when I started buying them, the G.I. Joe stuff was, I read that because everybody my age read that, and then, but the one comic, and this is, plays into why Larry Hama is at the show, the one of the comics that, there were two comics that I read that made me think about comics differently, and I'm sure you're going to guess the one comic I'll say that Larry Hama had a part in.
Was it the silent issue?
Yep. Because after reading it, you know, comics were all about the art, but for me, I just read the story. That was the first issue that I read, and I was probably like 9 or 10 years old or something. That was the first issue I read that I was like, really got the point of the art. I mean, how much the art influenced the story, and which sounds kind of crazy, but to a 10-year-old, who had just been looking at pretty pictures, you know, that was the first time that I thought you could really tell a story without ever saying a word, really, or printing a word, I guess. So that was a huge turning point for me as a reader. And then the other one was a backup issue in a Spider-Man title that I can't remember the number. The first story was about Spider-Man versus a member of the Wrecking Crew. I don't even remember much about that story. But the second one was, I want to say Roger Stern wrote it. But it was called The Boy Who Collected Spider-Man. And it was basically a story about this little boy who had a scrapbook that had all of these Spider-Man things in it. Just clipping after clipping. Have you, anybody read that one?
I have not.
No, okay. It doesn't ring a bell.
We had a big bunch of Spider-Man stuff, and then the next to the last panel, Spider-Man's getting ready to go out the window, and the little boy says, "Can I ask for one more thing?" He gives him like an autograph, and he gives him, I don't remember what else he gives him, and he says, "Can I have one more thing?" And he said, can I see your face, or can you tell me who you are, or something like that. And he tells him, no, he can't do that. And he pauses at the window, and he turns around, takes his mask off, and hugs the little boy. And then as he's swinging out, there's a sign that says Juvenile Cancer Center.
Oh man.
And, you know, I had lost a couple grandparents to cancer at that point, and that was the first time that I read a comic story that I thought, this doesn't have to be all about fighting or big epic battles or whatever. There's a human, more of a human element to it than that. So, and those, I read those probably within a year of each other, and that really, those two I would single out probably as the ones that kind of changed my thinking on what the comic medium was about.
Right.
Do you think people nowadays have the experience where they share and trade comics anymore? Or do you think that it's more of a collector's market where people aren't so willing to hand down their comics to someone else?
I think it's largely a collector's market. I don't know if that's for better or worse. And sometimes I think it's for worse because you... Well, like with the new 52, for example.
Yeah.
I heard more people up in arms that they were changing this or changing that than people, new people who were interested in it. And you heard more people disappointed that they were changing the number of action or detective because it was going to screw up their collections.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, there's a place for the collecting stuff, and I don't have anything against it. But to me, it's just about reading them. And that's one reason why I've done more digital and went to more trades. Because, to me, if you're collecting it as a collectible item, I guess I can see more of the point of paying $4, $5 for an issue. But if I'm just going to read it and then hand it to my three-year-old, you know, I could buy the trade and save a little money, and I still get the same benefit of reading it.
Same satisfaction.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
Yeah.
Well, plus, I'm a geek bastard, so.
Your story makes me want to take some of my old comics and just hand them to random children.
I know, right?
Or buy an old Airstream.
Here's some Punishers, kid.
Okay.
Some Hellboy.
Yeah. Well, you know,
well, don't turn over the hell. What a ridiculous thing.
Looks like we're in a good spot to take our second break. Yeah. We'll be right back, and this will be the lightning round after we return.
See, you know, it's enough to get observed when we know exactly how for those little all but you're asking. Well, Creative Commoners is the most forward-thinking podcast around. Listen to hosts Chris Armstrong, Corey Bishop, and Allison Dixon as they discuss ideas that are anything but common. CreativeCommoners.net.
Hey, we're back again with part of our segment. We're interviewing Mr. Eric Bannister, the founder and
proprietor,
and overall good guy of the Derby City Comic Con.
Great guy, wonderful storyteller, not boring at all. Like some other guests we've had.
We were in tears during the break.
Yeah, we were.
Yeah.
That Spider-Man story, man.
Shut.
Like, I don't even need to read it. I felt like I just had this visual going into my mind. It was great.
Cancer stories and comics.
I wonder if was that
a popular thing.
Was that undone in One More Day? The kid's fine now.
I think in the One More Day version, Spidey turns around, flips him off, and then flies away.
Damn you, Joe Quesada.
Does anyone want to guess what's going to happen in number 700 or whatever? Where Dan Slott's like, I'm changing Spider-Man forever again.
I don't pay attention to that.
I don't know. I become a lot of really disenchanted with
really?
Mainstream comics.
I don't allow myself to read articles anymore since I'm on my comic book sabbatical, but I can't help but see the headlines when I go to Bleeding Cool.
Does Jessica read you the stuff?
No.
Here's what happened. She's like, in a magical world of...
No. I had to cheat a little because my son's got two Donald Duck comics he bought at Gym City. And he wants me to read them to him, so I've had to read those same two Donald Duck comics.
But you've already read it prior to your sabbatical, didn't
you? I had no interest in those Donald Duck comics.
You know, I think we've said Gem City Comic Con more than we said Derby City Comic Con.
Derby City Comic Con!
Really stop that.
Derby City Comic Con!
I don't mind at all. Jesse's a big supporter, so.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Did you ever meet Bill, who runs Fearless?
Oh, boy. We're already out of questions.
Yeah. The little show that I mentioned that's every other month in Indianapolis, Bill Oyce, he sits up there.
Okay.
Are you
okay?
Excuse me.
Are you still
up there?
Did you have a chip, I mean?
I did. What was it?
Justin's eating potato chips. He didn't realize that. He thought you might be choking on the potato chip he was eating.
I did.
I don't know how that works out, but
you know how those little corners sometimes break off and they gig you in the throat on the way down? That's what happened.
That's what happened. Wow. You answer questions that aren't on the list.
I'm not sure what
it was. Actually a jelly bean.
It was a jelly?
It was.
Go captain, my captain. Let's do the shit.
All right. All right. Who would win the Derby? I guess the Derby race. Mr. Ed, Comet, Mr. Horse, or
30-30?
Both. So you know who 30-30 is.
I didn't know who 30-30
is. How old are you, by the way?
40.
Okay, you might not know who 30-30 is.
Who's 30-30? What's he on?
I'll let you take this one.
He was Brave Star's horse from the cartoon Brave Star.
Brave Star.
He was the Native American sheriff of some alien planet. He had the strength of a bear, the eyes of an eagle, the speed of a
puma.
Because pumas live in the Old West.
Brave Star.
But 30-30 was his horse, and also, it wasn't a deputy, because deputy was Deputy Fuzz.
He was like
but he would turn into
a
dude.
A mechanical horse and a mechanical robot horse.
Who was like a sidekick.
Yeah.
And he had a shotgun.
Right. He was really, it's really cool.
30-30.
Yeah.
I love to come back as a comic.
You know who the other characters are?
I own that toy.
Mr. Ed is.
Mr. Horse is heroin, correct?
No, that's from Red. Jesus.
No, the horse is heroin. Never mind.
I know what he's talking about. He's way too rock and roll for us.
Mr. Horse, I do know that one, but I didn't know he had a name on Ren and Stimpy.
Oh, sir?
I didn't know his name.
Those fake press conferences where they're like, Mr. Horse, how do you feel on the matter?
Yes. Comet, is that Supergirl's horse?
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. I would go with Comet because he has got superpowers, and he was in love with Supergirl. So.
Yes. Once a year, Mick Comet would turn into a human.
Did you ever see those?
Yes, he would turn into a human once a year, and then him and Supergirl would...
copulate?
Yeah.
Coitus.
Oh, of course.
Hung like a horse.
Yeah.
So yes, I have read this.
Did she ever have a child? Is that where Beta Ray Bill came from?
Maybe. It's a bastard son. That's why I got shoved over to the Marvel universe.
Marvel universe. All the aborted fetuses from the DC universe.
Take that, 616. Wow.
Is that police code for back alley abortion? 616.
Oh, it's the Marvel universe.
I know. I'm joking.
Eric, if you could invite, this is a time travel question, if you could invite any comic book creator, living or dead, to the DerbyCon. Now, once again, when I say dead, I don't mean you're inviting a dead person, but you're getting them from using time travel machine, go back in time and get them. Who would it be? Who's the one comic book creator, maybe living now or maybe in the past, that you would really like to have had at the Derby City Comic Con?
Hands down, no question for me, Jack Kirby.
There you go. Booking.
Right. Now, with Jack Kirby?
What do you mean?
Well,
Jack Kirby.
I would take Jack Kirby from...
He understands the question.
Mid-80s.
Okay.
Because he would have all the other stuff under his belt.
True.
I think if you got him from the 60s when he's creating it, I don't think he, to a degree, fully realized what he was creating as far as what legacy that was going to leave and all that. So I think if you got him from the 60s, he wouldn't have that experience. If you got him from the 70s, I think there was a period there when he was pretty disenchanted with the whole thing, with leaving Marvel, going to DC, and then going back to Marvel.
When he turned
in. So I think in the 80s, when he started doing some more animation stuff, the stuff I've read, he seemed more comfortable with what his legacy might become in comics. So I think that's where I'd pluck him from.
Very cool.
Good answer, sir. Now, do you have any remorse of putting on a con for so many people, or do you, in fact, basket and sleep naked on top of a pile of money in expensive comics?
I do sleep on expensive comics because that goes back to my collector thing that I spoke about earlier. So I'd rather sleep on them and piss somebody off than just put them up. But no, I don't have any regrets.
Good.
No regrets.
Now, do you have like volunteers to help you out during the, or can you get volunteers to help you over the Derby City Con?
A timely question, because as we record this, today I posted another call for volunteers. We have a lot of people that are excited about the show and kind of promote the show on their own, but it's been a little more difficult to get people to volunteer to come and help on the actual day. So I do have four or five people that kind of help throughout the year and do different things.
Aside from Bruce and myself, who do you look forward most to seeing at the Derby City Comic Con?
Did you call it Gem City?
Nope, I said Derby City Comic Con.
Oh, okay.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again.
Hey there, guys. This is Ralphie Hughes, the only woman to ever grace this podcast. And the guys had a little problem again, but this time it was not Mike's fault. It all worked out eventually, so just sit back and enjoy a word or two about the new owner of this fine little show.
What happens when you visit the most attractive website on the planet? You get Pritchlapped. Pritchlapped.com, the online home of attractive game comic artist Chris Pritchard. It's attractive.
Why, thank you.
Hello?
Hello?
That was weird.
So the next thing, Bruce, for you to research is the crappy internet connections in southern Indiana.
Are we recording again? Yeah, we're always recording.
All right, I'll make sure. So we're back.
When we're talking, we're recording.
Sorry about that.
Oh, it's all right. It's not your fault, personally.
So, was it the connection or the question?
It was the question.
Okay.
He's not looking forward to
it. I don't know what happened. I was like, I finished my answer, and then it told me I was
we didn't hear anything.
Disconnected. Are you going to hear any other questions?
Justin asked a question, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. Mike Norton's calling me now, so I'm just going to go ahead and
right now. No, I gave a whole answer to the question, and then I looked over, and it said, you're not connected. So
repeat the question one more time. Aside from myself and Bruce, whom do you look forward
and
to?
And Mike. No, I put this question. I'm nobody to him right now. He hasn't met me yet.
Aside from Justin, Bruce, and Mike, who he's never met, nor has he ever attended Derby City Comic Con. Sorry, Mike.
That's fine.
You have not.
I have not. That's okay. Fine.
Wait till you see the bathrooms.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
It's magic.
Whom do you look forward to seeing at the Derby City Comic Con? Besides Larry Hama.
Mike Norton.
Mm-hmm.
Let me think. I got to run through the list in my head here.
Kind of like a rehash earlier question, but it's fine.
Well, now,
no, because his big guests. I mean, it doesn't mean he's excited to see them. They just
it's true.
Their names are like drawing anything. Ticket sales.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah. That, you know, you as the organizer, you get to pull in people that you want, but you also pull in some people that I don't really know that well, but because others recommended them, then I'll pull them in.
Yeah.
I'm going blank here. I am looking forward to seeing you guys because I hope and that issue 2 is available of Iron and Ink.
Of Iron and Ink.
Hey.
Derby City Comic Con 2013.
No, I'm working on it. I'm on page 5. Of it. I'll give you the first 5 pages. How's that?
Okay, preview.
I've been doing a lot of freelance. I've been making money. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I don't know. You know, I look forward to seeing a lot of... I've been... Since planning this, I've been going to a lot of shows, so I've kind of made some friends with artists that, even if I've got all their stuff, you know, I look forward to seeing them. You know, like Eric Adams. There's a few podcast people that will be there that I don't get to see very often. There's some local guys that I don't get to see very often that I enjoy their stuff quite a bit.
Eric Adams was the only guy that helped us carry our stuff to the elevator in Cincinnati. Everyone else, yourself included, Mr. Bannister.
Wanted to see us die on the
elevator. Just kind of giggled at us as we walked by.
No, actually, you stopped and talked to me, and I don't think I did offer to help, did I?
No.
We'll see who gets water now.
I'm on each end.
It goes against his catering contract. We've already had this conversation with him earlier. He's like, sorry, Union, my hands are clean, buddy. I don't touch this, all right? I could get in trouble.
We had disposable goods.
Yeah, that's right.
So let's say you do come to our table. You make it over there, and you do see Bruce, Mike, and myself. What individual commission, if you could request one from each of us, even the talented Mr. Michael Adams, what individual commission would you request?
I actually have a new sketchbook, and I have just in the last month or so printed off two or three sheets of reference pictures, and I would like to get Johnny Cash. Ooh. I want to whole sketchbook of Johnny Cash, different artists' interpretations of Johnny Cash.
Well, then Bruce has a poster for you, buddy.
Hey, I sold out.
I've seen a picture of it, but yeah, I'm a huge Johnny Cash fan, and this would put my two loves of music and comics together.
If I come dressed as a man in black, would you be really happy to see me then?
I would.
You're more like down like John Cusack than Johnny Cash.
I like Johnny Cash a lot, buddy.
John Cusack, you know all his movies he's been wearing black lately?
No, I don't care about John Cusack.
He's the Johnny Cash of comedy. That's all I'm saying.
Romantic comedy, baby.
So, I guess another question would be, who runs a better con, you or Danny Ocean?
I would say Danny Ocean because he probably made more money.
Yeah. I thought you were going to have a Star Trek reference in there. What's a better con, you or Kirk?
Oh, ooh, that's a good one. But some people won't get that joke.
Yeah.
I can't name names. All right. Oh, hey, guess what?
Who wouldn't get that?
I can't name names.
Your lady?
No, not my lady. I can't name names. I'll tell you. All right, so we're at the final question, and this is the most popular question in the votes. Which apparently supposed to be the first question, but because no one wanted to obey the rules when it came to putting things on, we've done everything.
I copy and pasted, dude. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Are you ready, Eric?
I'm ready.
Okay. this is one that was added on to the questions. The only one to participate in the adding on questions.
Really?
Yes.
Nice.
If you put a saddle on us and rode us, who would win the Derby? Mike, Bruce, or Justin?
All right, well, I gave this a lot of thought.
He's the one that added it.
Did you start breaking before you gave this a lot of thought? Because I feel like this should have been like, wipe my hands clean. I'm not even touching that with a 35 and a half foot pole.
Despite the homoeroticism of it, I did give it a lot of thought. I don't know. I've never met Mike. Of the podcasts that I've listened to, he's only been on a few. So I don't have a good enough sense of how he would compete. Justin strikes me as a little more mild-mannered, a little more reserved. So I would have to saddle up Bruce.
Wild card, baby.
I think.
You're talking about the guy who you'd saddle him up and he'd probably run over and take a 5-minute pee before the race started, just so you know. Like,
I have a tiny behind. Also, I have a bad heart.
You don't know what kind of size feet I have.
A lot of horses can urinate while they run. So
I need to try that.
My wife is an equestrian, so I have seen a lot of horses just randomly go right there.
And I loved to throw that fact out when people say, I have got to piss like a racehorse. Then I say, well, take off and start going.
Because it can happen, buddy, right now.
They could do it. So I think, and I also think, I think Bruce could could probably play dirty if you needed to.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think Bruce is always dirty.
I think we should get a photo op.
Eric writing Bruce.
That's him urinating.
In the bathroom so we can find.
Right next to the Magic the Gathering.
Derby City Comic Con, where magic happens. Whether you want it to or not.
That's it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
That's the questions. Wow.
Okay, so let's do a recap here. Second annual, I'm going to say annual, we'll assume this is happening.
I'm glad you didn't answer that last question.
What's that?
Nothing. Okay.
The second annual Derby City Comic Con, June 30th?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. At the Zen Convention Center, I'm guessing it's the Louisville Convention Center.
International Convention Center.
Louisville National Convention, you're cutting out a little there.
The Kentucky International Convention Center.
Oh, international convention.
And it's not just Louisville, Kentucky. All it's of Kentucky. It encompasses the whole state.
What time are we starting and stopping?
Doors open at 10, and the doors close at 5.
Admission prices?
$10. Kids 12 and under are free.
Nice. Oh, and bring out the little ones.
If you mention this podcast, it costs $1 more.
Because you're actually one of the suckers who listened to our podcast.
We will take a cut of that at the door.
I will filter that back to you if it gets iron and ink quicker.
We'll make a
dollar.
Done. I think that's, I mean, we did time, date, location. Big name, Mike Norton will be there. He may have a pug with him. We don't know.
Scott Simmons.
Scott D.M. Simmons.
Scott, Mike, want to sample a ditty?
I'm telling you, I don't know who that guy was. You got some
Chief
blood
Scott,
off the streets of London there.
Larry Hama, depending on
if Tony Moore
gets him.
Cobra!
Or a cold bra.
A cold bra? See, I keep thinking he has some sort of actual illness. Like...
I don't want to think about Bell's palsy or something. I don't want to think about
some sort of.
You know, he's going to hunt you down.
Genital Tourette's.
He's going to show
What is genital Tourette's?
I don't know. I don't think we need to go into what genital Tourette's.
Oh, I got to know. Email me.
Genital Tourette's. Thanks, Harry.
Is that just like a random erection? Or what is
it? I think we use.
Maybe more than an erection.
Yeah, who knows? All right, Harry.
I get so dehydrated. I feel like the 12th time it's just, I don't know, like cartilage coming out.
They did a tunnel rat on him, on Larry Hama.
What? Oh, they based tunnel rat on him? So he's used to... what are you telling me here?
Wait, he created the G.I. Joe movie?
Well, no. It was in the comics. They created the action figure.
Oh.
And they modeled, if you look at it, it's modeled after Larry Hama.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. That's something. And now you know.
And now he's,
you know the rest of the story.
The rest of the story. Paul Harvey reference. I like that. Mm-hmm. Is Tim Seeley going to be at Derby City?
Yeah. Tim Seeley and Sean Dove are the other two of the four stars.
So I think Seeley wrote G.I. Joe when it was at Devil's Due, correct?
I think he wrote it. I'm pretty sure he wrote that one or did a little art, and then the one star that's not going to be there, Josh, he wrote some, and I think Mike was the one of the editor, art director or something.
Yeah, to hear them talk about it on their podcast, which is far superior to ours, they made it sound like Devil's Due was like just a rotating room of four or five people. They did everything. But I didn't know if you were going to play up, like, hey, here's the G.I. Joe section of the convention.
No, not really. They're kind of spread out. I tried to spread out the, not to get too far afield here, but I tried to spread out the names, I guess, so they're not all clumped together where people can go like ants to it and back.
Yeah. Us nobodies appreciate that. And I'm in no way referencing my previous.
just name drop yourself again, Bruce.
Wow.
Man.
Horrible person. Like two stories, almost like a Gemini serial.
Okay, so we're going to pause for another break. We're going to come back, yes. And we're going to ruin the Avengers for, I think, the
everybody.
For the four people who hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Hello, Ralphie here again. This episode ran long. Longer than the Avengers, in fact. So Bruce and Justin decided to push that conversation back to another episode. Don't worry, they all like the movie. Even Mike. So check out all the great things the guys missed about Derby City at DerbyCityComicCon.com. Take a look at what Bruce has been doing instead of issue 2 of Iron and Ink at BruceAHughes.com. Justin and Mike are all over Facebook, and Justin just started himself a Twitter account, so you can stalk him there now as well. The break-ins will see you all in Louisville on the 30th.